Maybe start, just so I have it all on record, with some biographical details, your hometown, your schooling, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, I was born and grew up through grade school in Wisconsin, Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, outside of Milwaukee, and went to high school in Northbrook, Illinois. Came down here to the University of Illinois for college back in the 60s and had an electrical engineering computer science degree from that, and thought I was going to make the big bucks in that industry, but was going to get drafted. My draft number was really low or high, depending on the way you look at it, so I was going to serve. So I decided to be in the Air Force rather than in the Army at the time. Vietnam was winding down. So I went in the Air Force, had an opportunity to be a pilot, and so I went to pilot training, flew a bunch of airplanes, and spent 30 years there. I liked it so much. I mean, I had an 8-year commitment, but stayed for the whole time and met a lot of great people and a lot of opportunities to do some things that, you know, the average military person never had an opportunity to do. I had the opportunity to travel with President Reagan's advance team for 3 years doing Air Force Advance, they called it, because anytime Air Force One or Two is away from Washington, D.C., there's an Air Force guy on the ground to make sure that all of the security and fuel and needs of the airplane and the crew are taken care of. So I did that, you know, traveling with the White House Advance team under Reagan, like I said, for a while. And
how many years did you do that?
3 years.
3 years, okay.
Got to go to a bunch of countries, London and Venice and all over the Asia, stuff like that. So it was terrific. And then after that, I had an opportunity to command a squadron at Andrews that flew Air Force Two, and that was during Bush One's days. So those opportunities were rare back in those days. So I was very blessed to be able to do that. My final assignment was here at the University of Illinois as the professor of aerospace studies for running the Air Force ROTC program. So I did that for 3 years and then retired in 2001. I went and taught part-time at Parkland in their math department for a while after I retired. And then, you know, unfortunately for the nation, but fortunately for me, as it turned out, 9/11 happened and they needed some security expertise at the airport. So I started working part-time out here. We put in a security fence around the airport and just worked on some things. And then when the airport manager left, I interviewed and was able to become the airport manager back in 2004. Okay. And was the manager until almost 2 years ago now, when the executive director, Gene Cossey, was hired. Mm-hmm. I stuck around for a while. 2 years, which is a little longer than I expected, but I'll retire in December of this year.
The last time we talked, and I think it was around the time where you said you were going to stick around, and you mentioned that you had several projects that you were going to work on in these final months and years. Have you been able to accomplish what you've wanted to?
There were a few construction projects that were underway. Each year we get some federal dollars to spend on improving runways, taxiways, ramps, and stuff like that. So there was a fairly large taxiway realignment project that I wanted to see through. So that did wrap up. I took on another project where we actually removed a runway that had some safety issues with it, took that out, and added a new taxiway, and took all of the concrete that came out of that runway. And runways are, you know, 6,000 feet long and 150 feet wide and 2 feet thick. You can imagine all the concrete that comes out of that. So we ground that up on site and spread it out around our fence so that we had a nice perimeter road. We have to inspect the fence every day, and we were driving through mud and grass, and so now we have a nice crushed rock road that we can go around on. So yeah, I got all those done, and
okay.
It was rewarding.
Looking back at your time at the airport, biggest accomplishments or biggest projects that you took on that you look back and say, wow, that was really successful?
Well, there are probably a couple categories on that. We do get federal dollars every year, so we've made a tremendous amount of improvements on taxiways and ramps. We've resurfaced two of our four taxiways since I've been here. I talked about the realignment. We've widened two taxiways from 50 feet to 75 feet. That was a huge accomplishment because now we can easily handle the larger, even a wide body 767 can come in now. And, you know, we get some of those for sports teams. So those were great. We upgraded our electrical system that operates all of the lights and signs that are out on the airport. If you look at an airport at night, it's kind of pretty. Well, there's a lot of light. There's thousands and thousands of lights and signs out there. And we have a building that takes electricity off the grid, the regular grid, and then changes it into power that the airport can use. It's a different kind of thing like that. We've improved the ramp here. We completely rehabilitated the ramp at the commercial terminal. We redid the parking lot here, the entrance roads. We built a new T-hanger. A T-hanger is a parking building for small private aircraft, and the T comes from the shape of the building. Those are some of the things that were really, really good there. We added two boarding bridges that were due. That happened a couple years ago, and so that's been a great addition. When I got here, there were very small entrance doors. There were 3 8-foot revolvers, and it was kind of comical watching people coming in with bags and getting caught basically in that. I mean, it was comical, but it really wasn't very safe. So one of the early on projects we arranged for was to change the 8-foot doors into 14-foot revolvers. So now you can come in with 2-3 bags and not have to push a bag in separately from where you're going. We bought a lot of snow removal equipment. There's a passenger facility charge, which gets tacked on to every ticket at most places that you go. It amounts to a little over $4 that the airport gets. And we've bought a huge rotary boom, you know, 20-some-foot rotary brooms and snow blowers. We bought some trucks with plows on it. We bought a very expensive Striker, a fire truck. That's almost 10 years old now. It's amazing. That was like $750,000 off of passenger facility charge. So those type of things. And we've spent probably, I'm going to guess, over $5 million in just the passenger facility charge. And this is really a guess, but probably $30 or $35 million on improvements to taxiways and ramps since I've been here.
From that charge?
Well, the $5 million from the passenger facility charge, but the other entitlement dollars that we get.
Gotcha.
We've spent probably $30 or $35 million.
Okay.
So there have been a lot of improvements there.
Sure. Talking with Steve Wanzek, how about the biggest challenges you face here? And not necessarily dwelling on any negatives, but there had to have been some things that were challenging for you.
Well, there were lots of challenges, not the least of which was kind of getting handed off around the university. When I was hired, the airport was underneath the Institute of Aviation. And the Institute of Aviation went through a dramatic change, eventually shutting down. And so the airport was taken away from that during that transition and handed off to a variety of campus organizations. Auxiliary Services picked us up first, and then we were put underneath the university administration, you know, the three-campus organization. And then we were put back underneath the chancellor's office where we exist now. So that was a challenge in trying to educate new people as to what the role of the airport was, how it fit in, what the responsibilities of ownership of that airport were for people who had not dealt with it in the past. In other challenges, the way the airline industry has changed in 15 years that I've been here. So we used to have American flying to St. Louis. Well, St. Louis used to be an American hub, but when TWA was bought out by American, it used to be a huge TWA hub, but American kept it as a hub for a while, and then they decided that it would no longer be a hub. The significance of that is that there's no schedule of wave departures or wave arrivals that you could bring an airplane into and then count on having connections to a bunch of destinations. So St. Louis was set up for whatever its originating or destination demand was for traffic. So we lost that service. We used to have Delta in here for a while, and Delta provided, you know, service to Detroit, that provided service to Cincinnati for a while, had some regional jet service in here, but they decided they were going to put their effort, you know, elsewhere, and so they left us. So those are big challenges. We've been able to reverse that in the near term with getting more service from American, who stayed with us. We've got two flights to Dallas now. That started just last week. So we've got a morning departure and an afternoon departure to Dallas, and obviously there has to be an arrival in the afternoon to turn around and go back, and then we have a nighttime arrival from Dallas. So that's been really good. And we've got either five or six Chicago flights, depending on which four-week period we're talking about. And then United has added another dimension for us, going through Chicago initially, but connecting to, you know, 30 or 40 destinations with one stop that American didn't offer. So that's been a wonderful improvement.
Okay. You, since we're talking about United and the new service, let's kind of maybe talk about the current status of the airport, the current revitalization. Where do you see that going? I guess what's kind of a realistic goal for what this airport can be?
I think we've been able to recapture some of the lost passengers that would drive somewhere else for it. You know, we're not going to be able to compete very well with somebody who's trying to get to Southwest, because Southwest is never going to come to an airport this size. But by offering more flights, more seat availability, we've captured, you know, a good portion of the passengers that would leak to some other airport. I think in the future what you're going to see is bigger airplanes being flown. That's being driven by two things. One, we have a pilot shortage. It's very real. And so if you can fly a 70, 90, 100-passenger airplane with two pilots instead of a 50-passenger airplane with two pilots, then you're going to, obviously, you can move more passengers with the same number of pilots. Obviously, the newer airplanes also are much more fuel efficient. And with the cost of fuel down, that transition from the older 50-seat regional jets to the larger ones has slowed down a little bit because it isn't as demanding a need for the airlines to be able to get rid of those 50-seaters, but they're still transitioning them out. So I think what we're going to see here is we'll see an expansion of seats, although you may see a smaller number of flights per day, but you might see a 90-seat airplane in here or a 70-seat airplane with, you know, a first-class section, brand-new airplanes, much better, more comfortable airplane than, you know, something that's 20 years old or more.
The latest on maybe getting another airline, I know that's been talked about, and I think maybe to the East Coast they were talking about at one point. Do you see that happening soon?
Well, of course, we'd love to see that happen. It's not something that we ever stop working on. If we get East Coast service, and I think that's likely, it'll be with one of the airlines that already services, either American or United. We'll decide to go somewhere eastbound. there's westbound destinations that would help us as well that are that a 70 or 90 seat aircraft could get to relatively easy. So we're talking about that. I know that Gene Cossey is working with an airline or two, looking for a more like an Allegiant type service. We're talking to Allegiant, but there's other airlines out there that offer vacation type destinations out of here. So that's always on the plate. So that's a constant effort by the executive director in particular, and certainly when I was here for 15 years, it was something we kept working on. We're seeing a little bit of reward for that effort now.
Is that a process that, I mean, how long does that typically take to iron out an agreement like that? Months, years?
Well, years, yeah. Absolutely years. And even when you have the agreement, it takes 6 or 12 months to implement it. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they have to work it in. And unless they're getting new airplanes, which they are doing now, mm-hmm. they have to decide, okay, well, we've got all of our airplanes dedicated somewhere, so we're going to give you new service. We have to take it away from somebody with the hope that you're better than whatever we have that we know how well it's doing. So that's the battle you're fighting. When they're getting new airplanes, then, and the nice thing about United coming here and American expanding their service here is they're seeing success here. So once they see success, then they're likely to follow through on that and give you more. But we'll see.
Talking with Steve Wanzek at Willard Airport, you mentioned earlier how the industry has changed over the years. What have been your observations there, and how has that, I guess, dictated how your job has changed over the years?
Well, as I mentioned, we used to have service to a variety of direct flights. That's definitely gone away. The airlines are, at least the major airlines, are very happy with collecting passengers from airports in the region, sending them to a large airport, a hub like Chicago or Dallas, and then flying big airplanes around the world from there. It works very well for them, and it's efficient both in airplane use and with pilot use, crew use. So I think you're going to see that continuing for a long, long time. You know, a lot of an airport manager's job is really dealing with leases and dealing with landlord type activities. So that doesn't really change. We'd like to have more leases, so the more airlines you have, the more car rental companies you have, the more other activities going on. You know, we've got Einstein Brothers Bagels in the departure lounge now, so that's been a terrific addition that both for the airport and for the customers out there, so they can have something to eat here. That was another challenge that we had when our passenger count dropped and we lost some airlines. Then all of a sudden the restaurant that we had when I got here, you know, 15 years ago, just couldn't make it anymore. There weren't enough people eating here, so we had to shut that down. And now we have, you know, some more options for the passengers.
Okay. I can't leave without asking you about Air Force One. Your memories of that day.
Well, I wasn't here when it went off the runway.
Oh, you weren't.
I was actually the professor of aerospace study at the time.
Okay.
Although, interestingly enough, the pilot of that airplane was somebody that, when I was the commander at Andrews of the squadron that flew Air Force Two, I hired that guy into.
Right?
And unfortunately, as a result of that, he was no longer allowed to fly the DV airlift, so he didn't lose his wings, but he continued to fly. It's kind of a one-mistake world.
Sure. And then I remember when the vice president came here recently, you did an interview with us, and you were very adamant, saying that will not happen again here.
It didn't. It did not happen.
But
it was nice to be part of that again. Yeah. That's the squadron that flew him in is the squadron that I was the commander of back in the early 90s, so it was good to see that. New airplanes, when I was the commander, they were still flying the 707s from the same airplane that brought Kennedy's body back from Dallas, was still in active duty flying DV airlift when I was, you know, the commander of that squadron. So I flew that airplane and several others. Now they're flying 757s, which is a much improved airplane and experience, I'm sure, for the
So that was a neat moment for you then.
Very, very nice to get on the airplane and get to see how it's laid out, and that's not everybody gets to do that, so it's nice.
Any other good stories, good memories, moments that stick out in your mind? VIPs that have come through, anything like that?
No, I don't think we've had that many VIPs. I think the other thing that needs to be said is the impact that FlightStar has had on the airport. Since I've been here, they've built 3 new hangars, big hangars. They've expanded their maintenance operation and their charter operation tremendously. The latest hangar that they built, I forget how many square feet it is, but you can put 3 of the regional, of the 76-seat regional jets in it at the same time. They do overnight maintenance for American Airlines, 3 flights or 3 aircraft every night, and now they could do, 3 of the larger aircraft overnight. So they've really been the backbone of keeping the airport busy and have had a tremendous financial impact for the airport as well.
So once the calendar flips, what'll be next for you in your life?
Well, I just had a grandson born 3 days ago, so I hope to spend more time with him. And my wife's a little bit younger, so she's got a couple more years before she can retire, and then travel. We like to cruise. We like to travel by car and visit grandkids.
So you'll stay in the area at least for now?
Absolutely.
Keep going to Illini games?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a diehard fan. I got tickets to football, basketball, women's volleyball, women's basketball. We like to do it all.
Yeah. Your age, if you don't mind me asking.
Well, I'll be 70 next year, and one of the reasons I didn't apply to be the executive director is I just decided I didn't want to do this when I was 70, and they wanted a 5-year commitment, which is reasonable, so I kind of drew the line there.